Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I have been in every episode.
You sure have.
Maybe even, I think more than you.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that is true. There was the one occasion where I had the COVID and was unable to come in and record. And I think that you went in and you got to be the one true host.
The one true host. I think we basically just had was that the best of time, I think, maybe is what we did.
Maybe that was a best
maybe
of
that
time.
Was the, I don't think it was just me talking for an hour.
That would be incredible.
And welcome to the Just Jay podcast.
Right Yeah, I literally was thinking over the weekend that a fun podcast would be the Bucket Cast, and it would be a it would be just basically like me dictating personal experiences as I tackle like life bucket list items. So for example, earlier this year, like when I was like running the marathon, it would just sort of be like, okay, I just went on my 8 mile training run and this is sort of how I felt today. And so it'd be like, you would basically just get like an hour long episode of like the broken down audio saga of how I went from start to finish on achieving a bucket list item.
Okay.
And you know, so you're sort of there.
You just sort of tell the whole story, but because it's just you talking on your podcast, you have as much leeway to get into the nitty gritty as you want.
It's sort of, but also like, I think that, you know, it'd be just as easy. Like I had my phone at the starting line. So like, it would be just as easy to like open the phone and start recording a voice memo. Like,
oh, like while you're recording
in the moment. So it would be like vlogging, but you're only doing audio and you're not doing it with any other like scheduled cadence other than like this is almost like you get to listen to 5 months of my life where I start from here and end here.
Right.
And in the beginning, I don't have a finished product. And by the end of it, there is some kind of finished product.
Right. Like a semi-intentional finished product.
Yes. A semi-intentional finished product. Something, man, can you imagine if the pop was a semi-intentional finished product?
No, we are not intentional at all.
I cannot for the life of me describe this podcast to literally anybody.
Man, like, it's just two dudes talking.
I know what that means,
yeah.
But I feel like the first podcast I ever listened to proper was called Hello Internet, hosted by CGP Grey and Brady Heron.
Yeah.
And I remember the way that it was explained to me is like, it's a two dudes talking podcast. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I started listening to it and it was like, okay, it's two dudes and they're talking.
That's exactly
it. And it's like
loosely tied together by their YouTube careers and videos they made and their like love of technology and stuff.
Yes.
That's sort of the tiniest of threads that keeps it all together.
Right. But like, you know, if you say like, oh, I'm listening to a new true crime podcast, people would be like, oh, I know exactly what that means.
Yeah,
and what is it? And I want in right away. And I feel like, I feel like that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. There needs to be a description for this kind of show. Because even when we first set it up, we had no idea what it was ultimately going to be about. And so I think that like whenever I get like the notifications for like, you just made the top charts or whatever, it's like the good pods top charts for after shows. And
oh yeah, I think we had to like check a category for it and it was sort of after. Because initially, I think the general idea was that it was going to be that we would like deep dive further into the topics that we did for our videos, but sort of talked about the things that we didn't have time to, or talked about like the fandoms or that we like enjoy but don't talk about on the main channel, or like other movies we might have seen or something, you know, general Hollywood stuff. Yeah, I'm using the word general a lot, aren't I?
It's okay.
As we started, it was sort of like that, but anytime like a particular topic would come up, it seemed like, you know what that reminds me of is this story. And then it seemed like the more we kind of kept going, it was like the stories and the stuff were more interesting than the than the commentary, and that's just now we've just become our own thing, which I think is the best thing.
The best thing. Well, and it's funny too, because I think all throughout the year 2019, which is when we started this podcast, it was like the pitch, you know, because like we had the concept to do it, and like anything that we do, it takes us like 13 months to make a decision to actually do it.
We're slow.
We are very slow in making decisions. So if you've ever seen us as an entity make a decision about anything, I feel like we've been discussing it for far too long.
It's
been taking forever.
Today, as we were recording this, we were going to do a soft reset of like our Discord server.
Yes.
Like, but by which we mean just sort of like basically just like consolidate a bunch of things about it.
Yeah. Like
to make it more like, kind of like I feel like it's got this like very wide web that's very confusing to follow. And it's like we just want to like streamline it a little bit more. And we talked about this with the mods like months ago. And we have the plans to do it and what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And the things that we're going to change about it. And it's like today is the day we're supposed to do it. And we're like, well, we're pretty busy today. So as you're listening to this, maybe we did it and maybe we didn't, but you should know that if you're in the Discord server, it's certainly either already come or coming soon, probably.
Yeah. This is one of those things. We had that conversation about like Twitter and Threads last week, where we were sort of like comparing like how like Twitter had like existed for so long that it had eventually gone through like the life cycle of a social media website to where it's like it had eventually found itself being all negative.
Yeah.
And Threads, it was almost like it was brand new and fun and just like so much room for activities.
Yeah.
You know, when people are like, this is the best. You know, we could just like run in and parade and have such a good time. And I'm like, will that last? Like,
I know.
Or is it just like because it's like fun and new and good and, you know, like whatever.
I was scrolling on Threads the other day and there was someone who just posted a meme that said it was like some Christian Bale just pose where he was just sort of looking kind of like, you know, Insidious or something.
Okay.
And like the meme was just like, be the person who posts something that makes someone close the app. And I was like, why would you want this? Like that post alone almost like made me so mad. It made me feel like Twitter.
I
hate this. Do not let this on here. Get this out.
Are there people out there who this is their objective?
This is their goal. Like, I'm going to make an environment. They're just Sue Sylvestering all over the place, you know? Make an environment that is so toxic.
Right.
Like, why? Why would that be your goal? That's so dumb. And I hate it.
The thing is that most of the time whenever I interact with anything that I would find to be toxic on the internet, I am always 100% and unequivocally giving the person the benefit of the doubt that they are not trying to upset me.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is my absolute assumption. Like they are not like on a quest to like cause disruption. They just genuinely believe this thing. And so it's like,
I'm not sure which is worse sometimes.
Well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Like, I think for me, the underlying like malice of like intentionally trying to like make someone upset, like to me, that is internet trolls. And to me, internet trolls have never been the problem. Like internet trolls suck. Everybody knows they suck. I give them zero validation.
Right.
Like, it's like you are trying to be mean. Hard stop. It's the people that say things where it's like, oh man, okay, I can see where you're coming from. And I respect you as a human being. And so I need to take what you're saying, like with like, you know, I need to take it like more seriously. Like I need to appreciate it, you know, or whatever.
Right. But the question is, are they just still trolling?
That would be the question. That would be the question. It's like, is there a chance that this is like a way to achieve some sense of like control in the otherwise like swirling, dark, stormy seas that are the internet discourse?
It is entirely possible as well that people are trolling without even knowing they're trolling. That like they are just like putting out hot takes or bad takes on purpose to get like reactions, to get that like dopamine hit of like, oh my God, I got 17 notifications because I put up a, you know, this crazy take.
Oh, sure.
And
sure,
it's just
sure.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to bother anyone. I'm just trying to get lots of reactions out of people. And it's like, but in like a great way to do that is to be very, contrary.
Well, yeah, I'm going to call it the brown t-shirt paradox. Once again, we've talked on many occasions about about my, my finisher.
Let's go deep, man.
For a brown t-shirt. But I actually think that it applies because this is like what happened back in my early days of finding my look or whatever. You know, I would go out, I would buy these brown t-shirts, and I bought my original brown t-shirt and I got to school and I could not believe the feedback I got. Like, it made me feel so good and like confident and like in something I had never felt before. And so then it was like, man, maybe I need to get more shirts. And so the idea was that, like, it's like, well, I'm going to go to the store. And it's like, well, people like the brown shirt, you know? So it's like, but they have a whole bunch of other patterns for brown shirts. And so I had like pigeonholed myself into this like one, like it was like, I had such a small rudimentary knowledge of like what my fashion sense or my own sense of style or like who I was or like how I would express myself that it was limited to brown t-shirts. And I think that like the reason, and you guys have heard the story before, but the reason I bring it up is just simply because I think like that can be the case in the world where people value like likes and comments and social media notoriety, in that it's sort of like you might be going out there and kind of throwing like, you know, the spaghetti at the wall, so to speak, like kind of like looking for what sticks.
What's gonna stick?
It may be the case that, you know, it's like, ooh, man, like I posted that, like that semi-controversial take, or like a staunch opinion about something, or like I stood on this side of the divide or whatever. And the end result was that I had a whole bunch of people who I disagree with being angry at me, and I disagree with them. So their anger actually is like not a problem.
Right.
That's
good.
That's good. Like, that's not a problem. But in the meantime, I had a whole bunch of people that like were on my side of the equation, and they were all like, yeah, you're the best. Like, this is awesome. And so like what happens is that I found, like, in the same way that it'd be like, if I never did anything other than wear brown shirts again for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. it'd be like, I found my secret sauce. I found the equation. I've solved it. Like, I know how to be like a voice on the internet that receives a measure of feedback.
Right.
And probably,
it's just a matter of wearing a brown shirt.
And it's just a matter of wearing a brown shirt, you know? But it's like, there's a whole kaleidoscope of colors out there that you could go and explore. It doesn't need to just be brown shirts.
It definitely does not need to be just brown.
No, don't be just brown t-shirts.
Don't be just brown t-shirts. A brown t-shirt coming to you soon from Popcorn Culture.
Oh my gosh. Should we do a brown t-shirt?
We should do a brown t-shirt with like rainbow writing on it or something. Oh, that sounds so bad. Never mind. I take it back.
It's such a clash. But it would be really fun.
But should we do a brown t-shirt?
It would be really fun to do a brown t-shirt and like inspired by like the like my like early 2000s, like Billabong,
right,
Quicksilver, mm-hmm. Volcom.
Yeah.
These were all things that I wore
right,
at the time.
Yeah.
And actually, I have no issue with any of these brands at this point in time in my life either. I'd probably still wear them, but maybe just not explicitly brown.
I'm wearing Vans right now.
Look at you go.
On my feet.
But they're white. They're white on
they
your feet.
They are white. Yeah, well, sure.
They're
not brown. You're wearing brown shoes.
You are wearing brown shoes. That's true. Oh, man. I'm going to like, look. I feel like I'm very aware of the brown in my life all of a sudden. Maybe I never did let it go.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like this has become a very dangerous topic.
It does.
I feel like we have entered waters. We are exiting immediately.
All right.
Anyway.
Hey, speaking of entering waters, I went on a trip this weekend.
You did.
I did. It was quite fun. We went to Lexington, Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah, Lexington, Kentucky is great at two things.
Okay.
Horses and bourbon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Also, they used to have a really cool jellyfish aquarium once upon a time.
Because jellyfish are decisively not horses or bourbon, they didn't do it.
Oh, they're gone now. So otherwise, but either which way, the bourbon and horses remain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Okay. So just a quick note about the horses thing on there. It is such part of the culture there. It's not like, oh yeah, there's horses around. It's like, no, if you're in Lexington, horses, right? For sure. Like the streets are named after famous horses, and they will seem bananas to you if you're unaware that it's a horse name.
I could totally imagine. Yeah,
yeah. So you're turning down a street, and it's like, the name of this street is Man of War. And you're like, wow, that is a really intense name for a street. And you're like, no, that's the most famous horse ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Man of War. This horse in particular, it's like, it was like a specimen, you know, Like, it's one of those things where some, it'd be like if in the 60s someone had accidentally invented like a turbo Ferrari from 2019, and then people were like, we lost the blueprints. We have no idea how they did it.
But there was one.
But there was one, and wow, was it fast. You can't believe how fast this thing was.
Right.
It's just like, this horse was like, you know, the genetic godsend of like horses. Like, it was just like, it was just an unfair horse, basically. It's like, people are doing their best to try and make the fastest horses in the world, and it's like, yeah, but this horse, it's like, you, this horse.
Well, I think this is amazing and interesting because I also think about like, you know, how people go on to be like professional athletes or Olympians. And you sort of talk about like how you need to not only have like the talent and ability and predisposition to be this particular thing, but you also need to have been exposed to it and then have like, you know, the proper competitive environment around you to best like exemplify those particular skills. And then like, you know, parents, family, neighbors, anything who can like help support you in the process in pursuing this particular thing. And it's like how many instances where like, were was it the case where somebody maybe had all the talent and the ability, but like never got exposed to the right sport. And therefore you know, like the Michael Jordan of, ice curling, you know,
wasn't there, went
completely undiscovered because they lived in like a climate that didn't have curling as like a primary activity or something. But interestingly, so I've been talking with the guys in the office who are baseball fans. I don't even know the name of the person, but apparently he is like the next contender, like the next Wayne Gretzky, LeBron James, like, you know, like Serena Williams, of a sport, and it is baseball. And it is a very rare occurrence where it is someone who is both extremely good at pitching and hitting. And in the world of baseball, typically you have, and I'm like so out of my depth right now, I don't know a whole lot about baseball at all, but you normally have what's called a designated hitter, which I think is normally somebody who would like step in to hit for the pitcher, because typically the pitcher spends all their time pitching,
so they don't do any batting. This is like, yeah, it's no doubt that this person would like ruin baseball.
Yeah,
and be a giant. It's like, this is like when, like, I mean, this is literally when Michael Vick entered the game. You know, guess what? Now there's mobile quarterbacks. You thought they were just these slow guys who could throw the ball really good, and they didn't run fast because all they did to practice was throw the ball. Well, guess what? Now this guy is not only really fast, he's faster than everyone on your side of the field. And he could throw the ball.
Left-handed.
Good luck with that. And that was good enough to get them to the national championship game.
Woo-woo!
That year, 1999. And you know what? I say like it was one good year. That one good year turned into like 20 good seasons in just about a row until the last few years, which have been really disappointing for Hokie fans. This is our year, man.
This is our year. You know what? If any year was our year, this is our year.
This is our year.
It could happen.
You know what? It doesn't stop my enjoyment for the games at all. We're getting towards that part of the year where like football is, I guess the preseason's already started, but it is like on the horizon. I'm like, yeah, I'm excited for some football. I'm ready. Let's go.
It's
about that time
for people to start to hear and us talk about this again.
I know.
But either which way, so you were telling me about a truly magnificent horse
that
was also like the bizarre combination of these.
It's so funny to me that like horse racing is such like a wildly competitive thing and put people so much money into trying to get the best horses imaginable. And I could be misinformed here, but my understanding is that Man of War was like a once in a several generations kind of like specimen that just was like really good. Like that you can go to the horse like Hall of Fame or whatever in Lexington. Or I don't even know if that's the right word, but you can like see his like gait, like how far like his stride is. If you know about like how video cameras were invented,
absolutely,
right? Yeah, do you?
Well,
the first thing caught on video, quote unquote, was a horse running.
Oh, I did not know that.
Okay,
very interesting.
Was a horse running, and basically what they did was they just set up a ton of cameras in a row, and like as it went down, they just and then they were able to see the horse running when they lined it all up together and played it back really quickly.
This
is how they confirmed that horses do leave the ground. This was part of the argument was that like when horses run, are all four of their legs ever off the ground at the same time?
And
they absolutely are. I'm not sure if that feels like sort of the sort of thing you could just look at and see. Maybe someone wanted proof. I don't know. Then the people who did this was Kodak.
Okay.
Anyway, so if you go to the Horse Hall of Fame, you can see the stride for Man of War, which is like, I think considered the distance from like when they kick off and all four are off the ground until they like are on the ground again.
Okay.
And I want to tell you, Ben, that he would be off the ground for this and the entire space of this room.
That is
like from here to there.
That is, you know, absolutely.
Like, it is so much further than you think.
Right.
And I'm like, you could imagine this giant horse going full speed. Anyway, that's just a quick aside about Man of War. We were talking about going into water.
We were talking about going into the water.
Somehow. Which was my real segue.
Right.
No, Man of War is a street in Lexington where I was this weekend. And the Airbnb we're staying at had a pool in the backyard, which is great when you have kids because that's just a whole attraction into itself.
Yeah, absolutely is. Always yeah. is. Yep.
Yeah, but so we're back there and we're just playing. Nick and Nate especially love pools. They would just get in and jump. They love to jump off the side as much as possible. Nate especially, like, I would have said historically Nick is like the more adventurous one, but whenever it comes to water, Nate is like, hey, let's go.
He's a
water baby for sure. He is all about it. But so we're out there, we're having fun, and they're just jumping off the side of the pool, and I look over at some point and Nate just like, he kind of like gives me a look, and then he goes to the pool and he just does a straight up front flip into the pool. And I mean, now I gotta say, form could use some work for sure.
Hey,
but he went head first and like intentionally did a flip
at,
you know,
age three.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
It was incredible. And I was like, it blew my mind because like the word flip had not been said. It wasn't like I was doing flips into the pool.
Right.
I didn't say like, do you want to help me? Do you want me to help you try and do a flip? Do you want to try a flip? Do you know what a flip is? You know, nothing. It wasn't even in the vicinity, you know, he just walked up and just did it.
That's
just
amazing.
Completely unprompted. And I was like, I could not believe it. I was like, Nate, that was amazing. That was what made him do it? Like, is it just intrinsic that like kids want to flip? Or maybe he's seen it like on TV and cartoons or something.
Sure.
But he just went for it. And I couldn't believe it. It was so cool. And then sure enough, like 3 minutes later, Nick was like not to be left out. So he was up there giving it his all as well.
Yeah. No, when you sent us the video, I was sort of like, I was like, oh man, it's gonna be like a cute, like slow-mo jump in the water video. I was like, this is adorable. And then it was sort of like, Is that a rotation? A little bit of tuck going on?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So if anything, I would have said amazing form personally.
Yeah.
The thing I was most blown away by was one of them like dove in head first and like even with like water wings and everything on,
yeah,
like all the available like flotation devices,
mm-hmm,
went completely like all the way underwater for it was probably like 1.5 seconds, but it felt like forever. And like, you know, just like popped up, just smiling, grinning, like happy as could be. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
It was, I know. I was like, I was so proud of them. I couldn't believe they were going for it. So that was really good. Good job, Nick and Nate. Well done, boys.
This is literally something though that I would say, like, I remember being at the hotel in Virginia Beach when I learned how to backflip, mm-hmm, off the diving board for the first time.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if we were like out at night, like maybe even like after, like you were supposed to be out at the pool. I remember there wasn't a lifeguard out there, but like we were out there with Dad, and it was just sort of like one of these things where it was like the determination and like want to be able to do things off of a diving board is something that I think has been so ingrained into me, mm-hmm, since I was like a little kid.
Oh yeah.
Like I always wanted to be able to do flips and tricks and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
tucks, twists and dives
and
all sorts of
yeah,
stuff. Yeah. And it of course eventually led me to my one season career as our entire school's dive team.
Yeah.
My senior year of high school, where I did by default and lack of participation make it to the state meet, where I then came in last place. However, I did make it to states.
You did. State level diver here, yeah, on the pod.
Here on the pod. I know. It's I would like to say I always felt like I was less classically trained, more like, you know, like I learned, like, you know,
I learned diving on the streets.
On the streets.
Okay?
I learned
in
diving
in the puddles. Yeah. All right?
It's like you see a puddle, I see an opportunity.
Exactly. The cool thing I think about like doing like flips and stuff though is that like no one can do it for you, you know. It's the sort of thing where it's like you really get, at some point you just really got to go for it.
It's true.
Yeah. So that, like, I remember, yeah, like I remember the first time I did a front flip into a pool, and it was just like, you know, no one was asking me to do it either. It was just like, I'm just going to have to go for it.
Right.
You know, this is it.
Destiny awaits.
Destiny awaits. I remember, yeah, learning how to do the backflips and stuff. And there was like, I remember for so long thinking like, how are you supposed to do like a, like run and do it? Cause like everything off the diving board my whole life had been like, you run and jump and do it. Yeah. And how are you supposed to run and jump and go backwards? Like you're like twist in the air. And it was like, at some point the technique of like, go just stand on the edge of the like diving board backwards and just give it like a good bounce, it'll almost flip for you.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It'll just do it.
It's like jump, lean backwards, bring your knees to your chest, and you have done a backflip.
That's pretty much it.
However, please backflip responsibly.
Please backflip responsibly. I know. I gotta make sure my boys know about all the terrible trials of our jumping off stuff into water.
Yeah, stories. It's like one of those things where it's like, I don't know if I can tell them because it's like,
what if
I
they feel try like and it go would do it?
Either they will be inspired or terrified.
Right.
You know, one or the other. And both are not the end result that I'd be in hopes of.
Right. You just want them to naturally be cautious just the right amount.
Right, right.
Exactly.
That being said, one of the things that had eluded me for almost my entire diving career that I did learn during my brief tenure as the school's dive team.
Yeah, right.
Was so you talk about the running forward and doing a backflip. That is at least on the streets.
at least on the streets, not on the puddle jump.
In the puds.
Yeah,
was referred to as a gainer.
Yeah, that's something. What it's called. Well, you're right. That's what I think. You're right. That's what I always called it too.
Yeah, or a reverse tuck, possibly is what it could be referred to.
Now it sounds way less fun.
Yeah, I know.
A reverse tuck.
I know. Yeah,
that does sound like you went from playing street ball to the NBA.
Exactly.
Like
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sorry, that wasn't a. That wasn't an. I can't even think of the right words. You know.
Right. It's like a layup instead of like an alley oop.
Yeah.
Or something. Well,
no, those are completely different things.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Anyway, I can't give a good example.
Yeah.
However, I did that. That was like the quest my whole life. We had a lifeguard at our the pool we went to growing up, and there were two low boards and then a high dive, and one of the lifeguards could go up and he would do the most unbelievable gainers off of the high dive, and I was just like, that is the peak of coolness.
This is it.
And I could do everything else, and to the point where like, I mean, guys would come up to me on the diving boards,
yeah,
you know, and they'd be like, you want to have a jump off?
Right.
And
yeah.
It would be
you
like,
have a jump off?
And it'd be like, all right, let's go. Let's go. Man. And like, this is like the only category of like young Ben life that had like any measure of swagger or confidence in any way, shape,
Welcome
or form.
Welcome to Stomp the Boards, the Ben Carlin story.
Can that be a thing? I think, next to 27 Butts, we have like a Hot Rod-esque movie that is entirely about a young boy's conquest of the diving boards.
Right, yeah. But I think like Napoleon Dynamite style. So like everyone's actually kind of bad at it.
but also like everybody is like super lean.
But everyone's really leaned in.
Like it matters.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like Napoleon's going for the triple back.
I know. Is it going to happen?
Is it going to happen?
And so
it doesn't look like a perfect gymnast when he does it.
Right. Yeah, but technically it happens.
Yeah, but technically it happens. Maybe this is a bad example because Napoleon breaks it down pretty hard.
He actually really does. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. Really inspiring dancers the world over, I like to imagine. But
I think you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I could never do the gainer. So I remember that, you know, I was probably like 12 in this particular jump off.
Yeah.
And there was either a young college student or like a senior in high school or something who was the challenger,
yeah,
so to speak. And so he ultimately, you know, we go through a few different things where we're kind of going toe for toe, all's well. He can pull off the gainer. I can't pull off the gainer. But the one trick I had up my sleeve was the California backflip.
Well, of course.
Which was, naturally one. I would say it was a GMA classic.
Oh, but I mean, yes. If it weren't for the GMA, I personally would never have even attempted the California backflip.
But instead we had.
But what? John Jennings had a pool in his backyard, so.
So we could do it. We could do it. But yeah, you would run forward to the end of the board where you would then get to the end of the board, jump in the air and spin, jump on the board backwards.
What? No, sorry.
Are you thinking of a California backflip differently?
This is to me sounding like you're getting to the end of the board, doing a jump, spinning, landing back on the board.
Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah,
so you run to the end of the board.
You jump. You run, you jump and spin so that you land on the end of the board facing backwards.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
at
like,
which point, you flying.
Yeah, you flying.
That's it.
And yeah, then you are committed. The thing that blows my mind is that the number of times I did this, I never got to the end of the board, jumped, and then missed the end of the board entirely.
Well, if there's one thing at all that you are wholly consumed by when performing this stunt, it is not doing that exact thing.
Yes. Yeah. If anything, you fall a bit short.
Yeah, because if you miss it, you're about to slam your face into the board.
Correct. Yeah. Which never happened, fortunately. Yep. Knock on woods. Yeah. But we, yeah, anyway, so that was how I ousted. I can't even really say ousted because we tied. I couldn't do the gainer. He couldn't do the California backflip.
I'm surprised he could do a gainer, but not a California backflip.
It's a confidence thing.
And you know, that's totally accurate.
Yeah. On both fronts.
I remember not mastering, but doing both of these things at the Jennings pool.
Yes.
Yeah, doing first. I mean, this is the great thing about being friends with the GMA is that most of the a large portion of our high school friendship was based on one-upsmanship.
It was constantly challenging each other to do things.
So the thing is, if you're the kid who owns the pool, you're way better at it
because
you have unlimited practice. Meanwhile, it's just like, look, I know I'm not going to be better than you, but I'm sure going to try in the 1 hour I've got. So let's go.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But so I remember just going for it and being so excited that I was able to actually do one. Is you right? It's all confidence. Once you jump and hit the board, like it's going to flip you no matter what.
Right.
Like that's just physics. But the gainer, I remember thinking that like, I remember just being like, after doing a few of the California backflips and just being like, okay, look, I used to imagine when I was a kid, before I'd even seen people doing it, that like doing a gainer involved like getting like jumping and going really far out and doing sort of almost like a slow motion kind of flip backwards.
Yes.
Like it would take like you could be very like almost graceful in the air with it. But that is not how you do it.
Yeah.
It is more like you almost need to have this like weird like you're moving forward quickly and so that when you jump, your forward momentum is going to, no matter what, continue moving you forward. But whilst you jump, you need to start leaning backwards such that when you hit the board, it will, your body will, like your head will go backwards, but your body will go forwards.
Correct.
If that makes sense. Or at least this was how I reasoned in my brain. And I was like, all right, here's the thing. You're not going to hit the board. So you just got a hard commit to leaning backwards. And then I did it. I want to say I always sort of had my hands out to the side, kind of doing like a momentum thing. Yeah. I don't think it looked great, but I'll tell you what. I completed a backflip running forward.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Heck yes. Put that in your pool and
splash it.
Nice. Yeah, that was really good. So that was exactly it too, because that's the other thing too about the gainer, is that like it is so counterintuitive, because you feel like if you run, jump forward, and then start leaning backwards, you're like, my head will strike the end of the diving board.
Yeah.
It's like chances are, as long as you're doing it correctly, it won't, and you will clear it by a lot. But like that is the kind of counterintuitive thinking where it's like, I want to be going as far forward and then rotating as much backwards as humanly possible.
Right. It doesn't even seem like the physics work. The other thing I was afraid of was that you'd go to do this, and because you're leaning backwards a little, that your feet would slide on the board. And that they would come out from under you and you'd just whip the board. Now, fortunately, most diving boards have like a rough surface to prevent this exact thing from happening, which is great. This is amazing to me how much of my, you're right. There's a certain amount of like street cred you get from the diving board.
That's what I thought. I have no idea. This is like one of those things where I just listened to the chapter in Wise Man's Fear yesterday where Quoth goes in and he's talking to Sleet about like getting the crossbow or whatever, and they're like going back and forth and like exchanging like what each of the person's like reputation is.
Yeah.
And Sleet points out, it's like, that's the thing about a man's reputation, isn't it? Everybody knows it except for the man himself.
Right.
And it was always like, this is like when I think back to how other people saw me at the pool as a kid, it's like I was like, there's not much more else that I can accomplish on these boards. I can do almost every trick that this pool has seen.
Right.
Sans the gainer.
Sans the gainer.
And it was sort of like, Does that mean like people are like, oh man,
it's Ben, like, Carlin's here. Whoa, look out.
Okay, but that's the
clear
thing.
Clear room on the diving board.
There is a moment in the movie Too Fast, Too Furious in the beginning where there's like all the street racing is happening.
Yeah.
And you see Paul Walker's character get like a phone call and he's like immediately like, you know, jumping out of bed and he's like blitzing it across town or whatever. And then like everybody else is like all lined up. And then he like gets into the lineup and one of the girls is like, crap. Brian's here,
right? Like, it's like, man,
yeah, it was just like, it was like everybody knows, it's like it's like we're all good, we're all confident, like,
we were all sitting here, we were just having a regular good time jumping off the boards doing cannonballs, now Ben's here,
now Ben's man. Here now it's on.
Yeah
that is always how like I hoped it was interpreted. Yeah. it's like oh no, could it be? Can't be.
Oh man.
Yeah
this is your like childhood imagination. I always have like one other memory from the diving board. It was when we were a little bit older and I was trying to do like just spin as much as possible whilst flipping, a regular McTwist.
Oh yeah,
if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah.
Or whatever Rocket League lingo was associated with this.
Right.
You know, yes. And I remember going off and I was just like, I'm just going to go full tilt, full send on this time. I didn't know those phrases at the time, but that was the sentiment.
Oh yeah, naturally. And yeah.
If you can imagine our pool growing up, the deep end had three diving boards on it and there was two lower boards and then one like giant high dive in the middle, meaning the two lower boards were a little bit closer to the wall than
that is true.
Not a problem. When you jump, you go forward, right? Well, I was going for full spin. So when I jumped, I went a little askew. There's no doubt. And I remember landing in the water and coming up and discovering that I was like a foot away from the wall upon landing. Way too close. And I remember the lifeguard looking down at me and going, first of all, that was awesome. Second of all, never do that again.
That's great, though.
I was like, whew, must have looked good.
That's what I heard. Can't wait to try that again. So this lifeguard down here.
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh. No, I never did again. I was like, nope. If I'd hit the wall, that'd have been, I'm gonna die.
I know. Well, this is like one of those things too. Yeah. Like we were a couple weekends ago, we were at the lake and we had like the Airbnb we were staying at had like one of those like double-decker docks where there's like a gate you can open so you can like jump off the top. Mm. One of my all-time favorite features of any lake house whatsoever is the ability to jump off of a top deck.
Of a top deck, a double-decker dock.
Always amazing. So it's probably like 10, 12 feet above the water or something. And so we were there with again, GMA member Mike and his son Noah. And so we were like running and like the game was to see who could spin the most times in the air, which I will say as an adult at this point in time, like I do not have any of the confidence that I would have had as a young lad, you know,
no.
like, and so it's one of these things where you start to realize that when you're running and jumping, all of your spin potential has been determined by the position of your body and the direction you were sending it the moment you left the ground.
Oh yeah, it's like this is how you played SSX.
Yes,
the snowboarding game.
Right. Yeah.
It was like, it doesn't matter. You need to have been preparing to spin long before you got to the end of the ramp.
Exactly, because like once you're in the air, you can't like just like press like the joystick sideways and have them spin.
Right.
Because like there's nothing to act on to make yourself spin at that point in time. And so that is frequently like what we were running into is like we would run and jump, and the question would be like, how much of a tornado movement were you giving yourself before you like let go? And at best, we could really only like achieve like a 360, which I was still was kind of like
embarrassing. It's a little low. You know. I think I could stand right here and jump more than a 360.
Well, that's the thing. It's like on ground, it's easier to do than like
when
like,
you're running.
Like running, And that's the other thing too is that like you needed enough clearance because the back of my boat stuck out from underneath the dock just enough to where like if you just like went like a foot out and down, you would have hit the boat. So you needed to like jump out and over the boat. So then you also needed like enough gusto in order to do this. But
man, I'm remembering a period from my childhood when I got really into doing this exact thing where I was just like trying to jump and spin as much as possible in the air.
Yeah.
It was just sort of like it was like something I didn't realize that I was spending a lot of time doing and be like, how much can I spin here? And I remember I was at Boy Scouts one night and I was just sort of standing there and it's like, it'd become like so second nature that I just like jumped and did it. And I landed like a full two spins and I like surprised myself. I was like, whoa, that was really far. I can't believe what just happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's it. That's my whole story.
One of the most incredible maneuvers
ever. I had quite a moment there with myself.
No, I know. But I mean, that's the same thing. So I remember when we were kids, it may have been the year 2000, it must have been after that, maybe 2002. World Cup was going on, and I'm sure you remember this particular commercial, but I think it had like a little less conversation played.
Oh my, like, yeah. This is the best series of commercials that's ever existed.
Yes, but it was like a whole bunch of like professional footballers, soccer players on like
a cage match style.
Cage match style on like a boat, right? It was like out
at
sea.
I think it was at least supposed to look like they were on a boat. Yeah.
Right. But so they were using like a chrome ball, I think.
Yep.
Like the ball itself was like almost
like a mini chrome ball, and the nets were pretty small too.
Yeah, so they were doing like all these like really cool like maneuvers and stuff like that,
right?
And it was so cool. But I remember one of the moves that one of the guys did, it was like the scorpion, which is like where you would like hold the ball in between your 2 feet, you would like jump forward, land like with your like stomach on the ground, your like feet would come up and like in like an arc behind you and like throw the ball over your head. And I remember seeing that, and basically like, again, it was like, this, there is nothing this that could possibly be more cool.
Peak cool.
Exactly. Yes. It was like, this is as good as it gets. And so needless to say, what I did was bought a hacky sack.
Oh, and you started doing scorpions with a hacky sack.
And so it was like, you know, I think we've talked about like our, like the dance socials and stuff like that we had in our middle school. And, you know, I would go to those and I'd bring my hacky sack, and, you know, like we couldn't keep it up for more than like 3 kicks.
Right.
You know,
sure.
Most of the time that was lucky. But like the thing I would do is like, as much as I could like work myself up the courage to do it, was to go in and do the scorpion toss. Yeah. As if like watching a 12-year-old throw a, like 2-inch bag of beans.
Yeah.
Like over their head was in some way like going to be the coolest thing that ever happened. But I was certain that if I could pull it off in front of like a group of cool people,
yeah,
that they would be like, wow, this guy's got some real potential.
This guy.
Have we seen him on a diving board yet?
Right? That's the thing. Yeah, people at the pool, Ben shows up. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
People at the hacky sack circle. Crap.
Yes.
It's the scorpion kid.
It's the scorpion kid. These were the dreams. This is it.
This is the kind of things that, like, yeah, it's the funny, the sort of ambitions you have as, like, a 10-year-old. Like, what avenues you're actively traveling down. Maybe just in your own head, but, like, in a real effort to, like, make yourself stand out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's exactly what's going on. I think it was just sort of like, for some reason I would see these things, and, you know, it was like, and I mean, this is probably the real point behind like how like influential just media in general can be.
Yeah.
But like, I felt like the scorpion kick thing in that particular soccer commercial for the World Cup, it was like at the moment, you know, it was like, out of all the cool things that all these professional athletes were just doing with the ball, like all of them are amazing. This was like the one that was like, that was the pièce de résistance,
right?
You know, like that was it, right?
That
there.
That was so, it. I think that was not the finale, actually.
Oh, well,
I want to say
actually,
it was really cool. I want to say the finale came down to whoever the two little 3-man teams were, and one guy, because the way the matches started was they would drop the chrome ball in the top of the cage.
Pretty cool.
And this one, and like the one team, like the guy bent over to like tie his shoe, but this was actually a ploy.
Another guy
ran and jumped off his back and did a header on the ball as it got dropped in the cage and scores the winning goal. Okay. And I was like,
that is pretty good too. Can you imagine how much it would hurt to have somebody in cleats jump off your back?
Yeah, it would hurt real bad. But you know what? They won the game.
They won the game.
They won the game. They won the boat cage soccer match.
Right. And I'm pretty sure the losers had to like be thrown overboard.
I think that was part of it. Yeah. If you lost, you got thrown off the boat.
Now I'm really hoping that we can find this particular
commercial.
There's
no doubt, Ben. Yeah. I think that was probably the best World Cup there ever was.
Maybe.
I want to say.
Did Brazil win?
I think it was Brazil versus Germany. And I think Brazil won. Yeah.
There you go.
I think that's what it was. I have fond memories of watching that World Cup. I wake up at like 3 a.m. to go down and watch England play as if, you know, I was a real big England fan back in the day.
I know I feel like this is always the case. I feel like all world related sports make you realize how quickly it's like any allegiance to anything. It's like you'll like get into like track and field, and they'll start telling you like the backstory for this particular long jumper or something like that, and you're all of a sudden like, I've been cheering for him his whole life.
I know. You're like, man, like suddenly someone will sit down and be like, this person right here. So their deal is that they've been jumping since they were 12. And the reason they're able to jump so far is because their dad taught them how to jump when they were 10. But then he got cancer like when they were in high school. And like, and all of a sudden you're like, they're like, well, you know a lot about long jumping. And you're like, yeah, I sat down about 5 minutes before you. So pretty much know the whole history of the sport by now.
I'm pretty up on this.
I'm pretty all in on this.
You'll notice that he wears these special shoes that pay homage to his dad, of exactly, course, naturally. Right. Who, you know, was the one who taught him how to jump in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just like, no, but that is so the case. It's like, and I think that it does happen to me with every like World Cup too, where it's like you start to figure out like which teams you're going to root for based on like what narratives or whatever. Like, it's like, oh, the Netherlands have made it to the finals this many times or whatever, but like have never won. I don't know if it's the Netherlands. Someone has done that.
Yeah.
There is like a team in World Cup soccer that has like made it like over and over and over to the finals, but has never actually like clinched.
Right.
And yeah. So it's like, you know, it'd be cool to see them win.
Yeah. It's a great story. It's a great story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. You know, Ronaldo versus Oliver Kahn. Ooh, what's going on?
Okay. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. And it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So anyway, you actually have something. We've barely touched our show notes at all today. You have something in here that I thought was a particularly interesting thing.
Okay.
And I feel like it could tie in very nicely to to like the piece of conversation that like that we were just having, like what stood out to us, what made things cool at such a young age. Okay. And so you have written here, is competitiveness a bad thing? Oh. I've been afraid to admit that I'm competitive on many occasions.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay. So, well, this is just like growing up, like, you know, we played, like basically year round sports, you know, and soccer, basketball, we ran cross country, yep. all that stuff. And like, you know, we played video games, you know, whatever it was, I felt like I liked competing. I would have like, I think when you're a kid, it's like, oh yeah, I'm very competitive, you know?
Sure.
Like that. It's just like, it's not, there's not like any sort of negative connotation. It's like, I play sports, I'm competitive, I want to win, end of sentence. But I feel like at some point in my life, like, I don't know if this is, and this is like one of those things where I don't know if it's like in general, it started to seem to me that like there was this like negativeness around like being competitive about things or like there have been times where people like where I will be like afraid to be like, yeah, like where people say like, are you competitive? And I'll be like, you know, I like to win, you know, but sure. I'm not like, yes, I'm very competitive. I seek out competition. I enjoy the feeling of winning. I love games. I love sports, you know, like I like, which is the real answer.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, you know, if I'm showing up, like I am playing to win. I want to be challenging myself in this particular capacity.
Right.
I want to see if I can overcome the odds or the associated challenge, you know, and grow, like within my realm. And I would say that like the interesting question there is sort of like if you were playing a, like, so for example, like playing a guitar for something like that, like it may be the case that like somewhere along the way, it's like, well, I really want to be able to play like that one guitar solo from that one song that's like renowned for being like one of the most like difficult, challenging songs of all time.
Okay.
I would argue that that is like a competitive challenge that you have placed on yourself, and it is a challenge like fully held by you. And that challenge basically is like, it's like you may be competitive with yourself to see if you can overcome the challenge and prove that you are capable of doing something great.
Right.
But like within that particular field, it's not like you, like guitar players aren't necessarily, and I'm sure someone would contest this, but like they're not necessarily playing against each other.
Right.
You know,
music like, tends to be pretty cooperative.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's, you know, but I mean, even like within like separate bands, like, you know, so like if you have like this band and like this guitarist and this band and this guitarist, like I suspect that like the people on stage like want to refine their craft as much as humanly possible, like for their own personal fulfillment, maybe less so like being like, no, it's me or him and me or that,
right,
whatever,
sure,
the case may be. And so I think it's interesting because like when it comes to like any ball sports, for example, is that typically like at the end of the day, like those fine motor skills or like being able to like juggle a soccer ball, like, you know, just kicking it up in the air like 100 times or something like mm-hmm. that. It's a skill that might be similar to like learning like a solo of sorts. You know, it's like it is something that I can now do that was technically difficult, that took time and practice and training to be able to complete. But like the real sport of it is to go and win the game.
Right.
And so I guess like on some level, my curiosity or question would be like, when you think of like that final outcome, is it like reaffirming to you and your knowledge base of like this skill that you have and sort of like self-affirming, or is it like it's similar to like being able to do the scorpion, like, oh man, like if people see me.
Oh, I definitely internally feel like winning things is impressive.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
But so then it becomes like a, on some level, like an outside validation type of like other people will see that I can win and therefore will have value because I have won and they saw me win.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
There's no doubt.
Okay. So and that's like a very interesting one, because then it's like at what point in time, like would anything, this is like the, do you remember when we talked about the hedonic treadmill? At one point in time.
I mean, I've heard that phrase before and I'm sure we've talked about it, but go ahead and give us a refresher.
Okay. So the hedonic treadmill is basically like a psychological observation that you have a baseline happiness and that pretty much regardless of good things or bad things, you will almost always come back to whatever that baseline is.
Mm-hmm.
So like winning a game might be like a win over here. Getting like a flat tire, like on your drive home from work, might be like a loss over here. But like by the weekend, regardless of like that win or loss, you're still going to kind of like meet at whatever the middle line there is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ultimate question sort of becomes, Like, do each of these victories, are they just sort of like blips along the way, like on that treadmill where like, it's like, yes, I won. And then like, how long do you get to like wear that like armor of victory or whatever before you just find yourself back at like, okay, time to find the next challenge.
Got
to
win again. Yeah.
Got to win again.
I don't know. It's not, I mean, like it's, I, cause in some ways it's sort of like, you know, like finishing, like a marathon or something, like, which, you know, like I'm sure you've heard the joke that like, oh yeah, I ran two marathons, my first and my last.
Right.
You know,
right,
and yes. On the same day or whatever. And it's like once you've done it, you will have always done it.
True.
So it's like, I mean, on some, for like certain things, like if you win, then you will have always have won on that day. Like
right.
That will stand forever. Whereas like other things are maybe just like, yeah, I won right now. This is just like a game tonight or something.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think I just, I enjoy being competitive and I enjoy like winning and I enjoy the feeling of like having played really well. Cause I think it's not just like, it's not just that I think, you know, there is a part of me that internally believes that like, this is impressive and people will think that it's cool that I won or whatever.
Right.
But like, there is also just a lot of like internal validation I get as well. Like we talk about Pokemon cards a lot and like I'll go and I'll play those tournaments, and I remember like I won the box tournament once upon a time.
Yep.
Here in the past in the past year or so, where I just like won a box of cards, but it was like a little bit more competitive and it was a little more people there and stuff. And so like when I won that one, it was just this like, oh, it was such a good feeling. Like
yeah.
I've worked so hard to get to be here and to win this box of cards right now. Like it
right.
is, it was not, you know, like it was not just like luck or accident. It was like a lot of effort that I put in, and it's like, no one cares, you know, like I don't think anyone really considers it that impressive. It's not like I'm going home. Beth's like, oh my God, you won. That's insane. That's amazing. You know, she's like, you know, it's like, oh, congratulations. What's next? You know?
Right. Yes. You know. Yes.
And
so that, I mean, that's a big question too, because I mean, like, this is also probably like where you've got like your own internalized feedback loop as well. And I think that like, I have argued at times before doing like what we do, like with like, you know, kind of general content creation-y type of stuff. Sometimes I feel like the feedback loop in terms of how your confidence is like ultimately like refilled by your hard work,
mm-hmm.
Is complicated because there's a lot of variables always at play that might be like playing a role on how well like the performance of a video ultimately ends up being. And so like at times I feel like we've had videos where I was like I'm like, you know, staring at the script, I'm like, we have just cracked, you know, it's like it's like national treasure type of situation. It's like, this is a mystery that has existed and we were the ones that found the answer, and
yeah.
It's like we put it on the page in front of us and we made an amazing video and I can't wait to share it. And then it's sort of like, nobody really found it as profound as I thought they were going to, you know, or like, you know, like maybe it like underperformed a little bit or something like that. And you're sort of like, man, I felt really good about that one. And it didn't really have the overall impact that I thought it would have. And so like sometimes that feedback loop can be inconsistent, whereas other times it might be the case where you were sort of like, you know, I just sort of have like a random idea today. I don't have something else like major that I want to discuss. Like I'll throw this on the board and like, you know, we'll see what happens. And it does great. And then you're like, well, shoot, I didn't even predict that one would do great. I was sort of like, I needed to make sure we had like a, you know, something that would work. And so I think that there's a lot to be said for, you know, competition being a great opportunity to go and find that ultimate conclusion, you know, mm-hmm. like to get that feedback loop, like kind of reaffirmed a little bit, like, you know, so with, like you're saying with the Pokemon, it's like, I spend a lot of time thinking about this, working on it, practicing, playing, you know, like fine tuning
yeah.
my deck, my hand, like keeping up with the meta, listening to podcasts, like, you know, like all of those various bits. And it's like to see all of those kind of come together and all this energy that you've put out, it makes it feel very worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, to see the end product.
Right.
You know, ultimately be there. And that end product is like, I won. Like,
right.
I have become more competitive in this thing. So I mean, all that being said, like, you know, I think that, my general thought here lately is that like the point of life is not necessarily it's not your career, but the point of your life is finding where you as an individual find fulfillment in the actions that you take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for everybody, these end up being slightly different things. This might be, you know, like playing competitively in a game or a sport, or it could be caring for a loved one, or it could be completing a marathon, or it could literally be being like the best lawyer in the history of lawyers.
Sure.
You know, so it could be your career. But that's why I would argue, if through competition brings you a sense of like confidence towards the thing that makes you feel fulfilled, then it's like, then it's an absolutely vital part of your human happiness and the human experience.
Okay. Well, I mean, I agree with you on that front. I guess my I feel like almost my trepidation on this front has almost been that like, it seems like I feel like I internalized that. That's part of just who I am. I like to play games. I like to win. I like to, you know, like I like to care about winning.
Sure.
You know, that's just it. But like, I feel like if people like ask like, are you competitive or whatever? If I were to answer like, yes, I'm very competitive. Like I, you know, that like it would be received like almost negatively. It would be seen as like a negative trait that is that like you care about or something. I don't know. I guess I don't know if the wider perception is that like being a competitive person is considered like less good or something, or is perceived as like a negative trait, or if this is just something I've sort of like encountered a few times and have internalized it more than was noteworthy.
Well, the thing about you is that I would say at no point in time have I ever thought that your competitive nature is yielding a conclusion that you are better than other people.
Right.
Certainly. Yeah.
I don't think I'm like a very like sore loser most of the time either.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't think so. So I mean that could be the case. It also may be, partially the like specific environment. Like I would be willing to bet like when you go to like your Pokemon regional tournaments and you're surrounded by lots of people who have all traveled to a specific area to do compete. A specific thing, like every single one of them, it's like there's not even a necessary conversation to be like, hey, are you competitive? It's like, that is why I'm here.
Right. Yeah.
Like, and so it could be the case, like, you know, if you're trying to like recruit a friend to come out and go like ride bikes with you on like go mountain biking for the first time, and you're like, just a warning, I'm extremely intense. Like my goal is to go out there and go as fast as I can, as hard as I can, and make it back to the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't think you're gonna win any newbies over with that particular.
For sure.
It's like we are super casual. We stop at all the trail posts. We're just there to hang out, talk, have fun. You know?
Right.
Like,
well, it's not like everything has to be a competition either anything, you know.
And that's probably the deciding line, is that it's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being, you know, competitive, especially in the environments that you're specifically talking about. Because I think that's probably what you're being, like what everybody else coming to the table is also holding in their mind. Like I can't imagine there's that many people going to the, like, you know, the Pokemon regional tournaments, for example, thinking like, well, there's no chance in the world that I'll win any games tomorrow. Like,
right. But do you think that, but I do think there are people who just in general are just like caring about winning is like mean spirited or something.
I see what you're saying.
Like you should never play with the sole intent of winning or something. Like all play should just be fun.
But that's like that. This probably feels like something where I almost feel like I'm you and you're me in this situation. And this is almost like one of those where like normally you would explain to me like, yeah, well, you're never going to please everybody.
Yeah.
And like, because I feel like I would typically have these exact same concerns and it would be like, can we just make sure that everybody's on the same page? Like, is it okay for me to be like a little bit more excited about this and like push a little bit harder? It's like, yes, of course that's okay. But like I that's the thing again, is that like I think that you're more specific with it. Like I don't think that your goal is to you want to win the game that you are engaged within. And I feel like the overly competitive nature a lot of times is like almost personified like in movies as like somebody who is willing to be like, so take the film, like Remember the Titans, for example, like in the end of the movie, like they're at the state championships and it's sort of like, you know, the ragtag group of players who have all come together and sort of like, so, like formed a brotherhood to face off against the team where like the linebacker on the other line is like actively saying like mean angry, rude, like, comments. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I feel like overly competitiveness feels like that. Like, not only do I want to beat you, but I will also be mean to you in the process if that helps me achieve my goals.
Right.
And it's like, that would be competitiveness taken too far. That is a problem. If you are being mean to other people as like a diversionary tactic, I would say, I'd be like, that needs to be toned down.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think again, you know, for the purposes of the movie, it's like that movie in particular is definitely speaking to much greater and more important themes, and it is symbolic and representative of those themes.
Of those themes, yeah. For sure. I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, if competitiveness is like interpreted as we'll try to win at any costs, like, that I feel like is not the correct definition.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But this is like where I think sometimes, like, this is how sometimes we're shown, you know, like through media or something like that, like what form that could take. But going and using all of your information and playing by the rules and trying your hardest, like, that, I don't see a scenario where I could call that as like a negative thing.
All right.
Because I think that a lot of times that's also like, you know, you're all, this is where I would argue that, like, at the end of the day, you're all still coming together to do a thing that you all love together. And, like, even that, I would argue, is part of the human experience.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you actually made this point to me at one point in time.
Yeah.
Like, where I've discussed, like, in a perfect utopia, for example, there's that, like, the weird dilemma with sports where it's, like, in a, like, losing a game, it's by its very nature disappointing. And if you live in a perfect utopia, then the idea is that, like, well, things shouldn't be disappointing. And at the point,
but like in a utopia, they wouldn't be disappointed.
They wouldn't be disappointed. And this is like the way that you framed it that I actually feel like was very helpful for me. But it was almost like if you go and you're in the Super Bowl or the national championship or, you know, insert your competitive avenue here, it's like to go and make it to the finals and, you know, to be the team that loses to the team that wins. It's like, what a cool opportunity to get to come and face off against the best. You know, mm-hmm. like to test, like, you know, like that would almost be like your interpretation inside of that world, like in the absolute perfect scenario where being a sore loser doesn't exist in any way.
Right.
You're just like, I'm just grateful I had the chance to be here. It was great to be on the big stage and see, right. like, you know, what
but we for the do. Most part, I do think that is how like most NFL players are.
Sure.
Like, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
like I can't, you know, I don't think I can't. God, this feels so dumb. I can't even remember who was at the Super Bowl last year. Bengals and the Chiefs. Is that right? No, Chiefs, that's two yeah. AFC teams, right?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
the Chiefs won,
so not the Bengals. The Chiefs played the Niners. No, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Whoever lost, let's say it was the 49ers. I don't think anyone looks at their season and was like, wow, failure of a season.
Yeah.
Like, and what? I don't think, like, I bet there's certainly, I'm sure many of the players are disappointed to have come so close and to have failed, but I don't think any of them are upset that they played in the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, take even like the Academy Awards, for example. Like, you know, like whenever you see a new trailer for a movie coming out, it is just as common to see. Like, you might say, like, you know, Academy Award winner Leonardo DiCaprio,
yeah,
Academy Award nominee,
yeah,
I don't know, I was gonna say Jennifer Lawrence, but she's also a winner, but like yeah. But the point is that, like, it's like just to have been nominated, like, as an actor in that field, it's sort of like, and I mean, this is another one of those things where it's like, but everybody who's not been nominated for an Academy Award, like, let's forget about them.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like, just even having been on the stage at all and being a part of the conversation is an accolade unto itself. It's like you made it into the final eight.
Yeah.
And now, and like, that was so significant that you will literally wear that badge for the rest of
right.
your
it
life.
Right, it will be used as part of the marketing for every movie you're in until you win.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In which case, it'll take some of the words off.
Right, yeah.
Academy Award winner, yeah.
Winner.
Yeah. And so, anyway, I mean, I think, yeah, that would be my take on it. But I would also say the big question to me is always, like, you know, if there is something like this and you were trying to determine why and how and like what significant it holds in your own life, like, usually that is the question that I think would be interesting to answer, which is probably something that you would do more like on a personal introspective level than, you know, here out loud on a podcast. But it's sort of like, why is it important that I win? Who am, like, is this for me? Is it for them? Is it, you know, like, and the thing I would say, my personal observation is that I think that like when you're on a conquest for anything, like me knowing you for my whole life, most of your life, is that I think that you want to win because I think it will make you like feel more confident and better. And like, you know, that's something that you can then take out into the rest of the world and be better out in the rest of the world because you also have been able to garner that confidence.
Sure.
That was something that I personally felt when I was at like my peak rock climbing. I was like, I felt like I was better at all aspects of life because it was almost like, even if it had nothing to do with my career as like, you know, making videos on the internet, it was sort of like, I know that in this aspect of my life, in this orb, I have a high degree of confidence and I feel good about who I am as a person. And I'm able to take that confidence and deliver it to other orbs.
Sure. That makes sense.
And that ends up being invaluable.
Right.
You know? So an absolutely like vital part of like, you know, who I was and my ability to like withstand all the stressors of those various other aspects. So
just a constant quest to build confidence.
Yes. Basically. Which hopefully will in the end yield a good and happy person who gets to enjoy the meaning of life. Which is something. Next week's episode of Popcorn Culture. The meaning of life. Woo! Explained.
We're getting real deep.
We're getting real deep. Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you
so
much.
It's front flips.
It's front flips. The meaning of life. Yes, that it is front flips. Or back flips.
Or back flips.
Or California back flip.
Really, any sort of mid-air rotation.
Into water.
But I'll tell you what, a land backflip. Pretty cool too.
I did. I at one point in time, I had a brief spell where some of my coworkers at my first job at Petland were competitive cheerleaders for the school in our area that is most known for like competition cheer, like not sideline necessarily, but like where you go and do all the like the tumbling and the towers and stuff like that. And she was like, she had known of my diving board skills.
Yeah.
You know,
she heard about the puddles.
She was about the puddles. Yeah. Seen me around a puddle before. And she was like, I know that you can do a backflip. Like, I know that it is all in your head. And so she taught me how to do it. And so for like 7 moments of my life, I was able to like do a backflip anywhere until eventually our across the street neighbor growing up was a gymnast and I was excited to show her and I did it in the backyard and landed on my face.
Oh.
And literally had a jaw full of dirt and a bloody nose. So
very like, nice.
That was the last one I ever did. And she was a very good sport about it, I thought.
Oh, that's
like,
good.
And I was like, you could be laughing at me right now.
But you're not. Like, you know what? You really went for it. And that's admirable. Wouldn't it be so funny if you get to the afterlife and it's like, you find out that's like the answer. Be like, so what was the meaning of life? And they were like, oh, it was gymnastics. And you're like, man.
Oh, shoot. I was so close.
I tried that as a kid. Like, yeah, I mean, like all we really are going for down there is just we want people flipping. Like, that's just like, it feels so obvious from here that's what the bodies are for. Like, you're so springy, you've got the ligaments, like so few people figure it out, but those who do,
they got it, man.
Yeah. Like, you know what, you say it, it's just like, yeah, of course. Why?
Now that I'm here and I'm looking down,
it's like, yeah, look at the way we were constructed. It's just like, yeah, I should have been doing more flips. God,
how much of a situation will it be in like the I would just love to, like the cafe where everybody goes to talk about the fact that none of us realized it, and we're all just like sitting there being like, can you believe it? Flips. Why does it feel so obvious now?
It feels so obvious.
Didn't feel obvious then. We tried so many different other things.
I know. You were like, and you know what the thing is? I did flips as a kid. I did. I was doing the flips. I was hit at the diving board. I was like, this is important to me. It felt natural. And then I abandoned it. I don't even know why.
Right. Like literally, like, and I assume that this will be something you'll be able to do, is just immediately pull your like memory database. And
yeah.
Like, look, here I am at the pool. You can see me. And look at my joy meter. You can see the joy meter through the roof. I was as happy as I could be.
Kids have it. Kids instinctually get it.
They understand.
Right.
They understand.
Look at my kid. Look at this kid right here. No one asked him to do this flip. He just did it. Okay. Look at that.
And so happy.
And so happy. He's joy upon joy.
Anyway,
here we are, dead. didn't do enough flips.
At least there's a cafe.
It feels weird that we still have to pay for stuff.
That is a strange one. The prices have gone up. The hash browns around here. I'm now craving hash browns.
It is about lunchtime.
Time to go get some fried potatoes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. I feel like it was a hooting and hollering good time. Mm-hmm. If you'd ever like just a little more extra pop action after each week's episode, there is After the Final Pop. It's an extra 15 to 20 minutes of Jay and I talking, which is available over on our Patreon at patreon.com/popcornculture. It's the $5 tier. You can also help vote for who is the one true host each week. Each sign up basically represents a vote towards Jay or myself, so it's a great way to tip the tide. If you've been a Jazzy Jay fan out there and you're like, you know what, Jay needs some more love,
yeah,
go and hit up the those Jazzy Jay tiers, or Buzzy B. I mean, there's also the Buzzy B tiers,
sure, whichever, yeah, whichever. Like, he needs anything else.
Again, patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.